Well, we put our friend Lennon there, and he's right there next to you.
Mm-hmm.
Then right next to him, we have the Earth Day here.
Mm-hmm.
Earth Day, 22nd of April, 1970.
Yes.
And Lenin's birthday, 22nd of April, 1870. So what's the odds of that coincidence for this to happen on the same day as his birthday?
This is Silicon Valley Front Row. I'm David, this is Steve, and we're joined by Brian Sussman, author and meteorologist. Brian, thanks again for being back on the show. So let's talk about climate and communism. Those are the two C's. What's the connection?
I have to mention, Brian, that, you know, we talked to quite a few people who are questioning the narrative of climate change. But I really can't think of any that are connecting this to communism.
Yeah.
So we'd love to hear from you.
Yeah, what's the bridge?
Let's start with the pillars of America. This is a unique country. No other country ever like it. Life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. That's what this country was founded on. Everyone has a right to life. Everyone has a right to liberty. Liberty is freedom from tyranny. We have a right to that. And then on top of that, we have the pursuit of happiness, which comes from a guy named John Locke. He was an English philosopher in the 1600s, and the founders of this country read all of his stuff, and they said, we like this guy. He came up with the pursuit of happiness. That is the pursuit of owning property. It's the stuff you own in your house, the physical stuff. It's the stuff you create with your own hands, and it's the stuff that's between your ears. It's your intellectual property. We believe in all those things, and that's the features of America that make this country great. Karl Marx believed in something else. He believed in, they're called the natural laws, the law of opposition, the law of negation, and the law of transformation. Boiling those down, it means this: human beings can't get along, period. Therefore, they need to be controlled, because left to their own devices, they will go crazy and they'll wreck the place. That's the law of negation, the law of opposites in a nutshell. And then the law of transformation. Karl Marx also believed that some people are born with a better brain than others. And those people with a better brain, those elites, have an obligation to rule everybody else. So, I mean, listen, you know better than any of us.
Mm-hmm.
You lived in a communist country.
Yes.
I mean, your family came from communist countries. My family came from communist countries. But you live there. You know what I'm talking about.
Yes.
They seek ways to control you.
Yes.
And they believe that there is an elite that's smarter than everybody else, and they're the ones in charge.
Yes.
And so Karl Marx and his early disciples really developed, and I bring this out in the book Climate Cult extremely well, and I spent a lot of time on it. Karl Marx and his original disciples all realized that the environment could be one of their greatest tools to get people to conform, to get them into a position where they could be easily controlled, and they could control the narrative. In fact, one of Karl Marx's disciples, Justus von Liebig was the guy's name, he came up with the term ecology. He thought this word really summarizes everything we plan to do. So they create laws, they create regulations in order to keep us in check and continually scare us with the fact that you, capitalist, you, industrialist, you person that craves to live a better life, look at all of the CO2 that you're pumping into the atmosphere that is choking off the sun and causing for climate change. You know, originally it was global warming. Well, actually, way before that, Karl Marx's writing partner was talking about global cooling. But then it became global warming. And when they saw that the climate wasn't warming, they said, we'll call it climate change. Oh, the climate's changing. So this is probably one of the best plays, or worst plays, depending on how you look at it, but one of the most effective plays in their playbook.
Thanks for that explanation. And, you know, on purpose, we didn't put Karl Marx in one of these pictures here because I don't want to look at his face.
Right.
But we put our friend Lenin there, and he's right there next to you.
Mm-hmm.
Then right next to him, we have the Earth Day here.
Mm-hmm.
And there's something that you told us, and then I wasn't familiar. David, I don't know if you're familiar. Earth Day, 22nd of April, 1970.
Yes.
And Lenin's birthday, 22nd of April, 1870.
Yes.
And, you know, I kind of ask, Wikipedia or whatever, ChatGPT, and it says it's a coincidence.
Yeah.
So what's the odds of that coincidence for this to happen on the same day as his birthday, 100th birthday?
It's interesting because it is true. The first Earth Day was April 22nd, 1970. And Vladimir Lenin would have been 100 years old on that date. I personally don't think it's any coincidence, especially when you do the research that I've done that shows that Lenin's mentors, which were Karl Marx and Friedrich Engels, they believed entirely that humans left to their own devices would pollute the planet, and that pollution would cause big clouds in the sky of debris, and that would choke off the sun's rays, and we'd go into a period of global cooling. They totally believe that. The first Earth Day, April 22nd, 1970. I remember this very well. I was just a kid at the time. I was in high school. The two people responsible for that were Rachel Carson. She had a book called Line, Please. Rachel Carson, Silent Spring. Okay. Silent Spring. Yes, how we forget. You can find Silent Spring in any bookstore in America today. It's nothing but absolute scientific garbage. But it scared America into believing we were involved in an environmental crisis. And the other person at that particular time, his last name was Singer. He was a professor at Stanford. And he was also a guy who wrote a very, very scary book at that particular time that had gripped America into believing pollution is our biggest fear. We've got to do something. And it's all because of those mostly right-wing industrialist capitalists who want to build a better life for themselves with more stuff. And we've got to stop it. That's where Earth Day came from.
Mm. Now, we do need to mention how no one wants pollution. No one wants smog or dirty water or whatever. So where is the balance there? Right. You know, you don't want to overdo it, I guess, but you got to take care of things, right?
Sure. And nobody wants, we all want clean, pristine skies. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And we all want clean water. No problem with that. And I want a pristine forest.
Yeah.
We all want that. And we can do that. That's in our nature to want those things. But what they've done is they've taken something that is a necessary component of the environment, in the environment that we can't see, that we can't taste, and that we can't touch, and unless you're well-versed, you can't even understand, and that's CO2. They want you to believe that carbon dioxide, as I'm speaking right now, I'm expelling carbon dioxide. Mm-hmm. Is anybody dying around me? Is the studio heating up because I'm talking so much? No, it's not. Volcanoes spew carbon dioxide into the atmosphere. Is anybody trying to plug up the volcanoes? You look at the massive peat bogs all around the world that are smoldering 24/7. They just naturally smolder. They're expelling CO2 into the atmosphere. CO2 in the fall, all the leaves fall to the ground. That's what we call a fall. They fall to the ground and they decompose. As they decompose, CO2 is rising into the atmosphere. Are we trying to stop autumn? What do? We want a perpetual spring? So they've taken something and they've been so deceitful about making us believe that it's a poison that can change the planet when in fact it's a natural component of the atmosphere that only accounts for 0.04%. If I could take just a moment, and I do this in the book Climate Cult, I lay out a football field, okay, 100-yard football field, American football, 100-yard football field, and I show you how much of that football field is oxygen, how much is argon, how much are all the other things. The last 1.5 inch of that football field would be CO2. It's hardly scary. It's hardly frightening.
Well, there's more studies on this regarding oxygen. Plants make oxygen and inhale, take in the CO2.
Yeah.
If there's not enough CO2, they will not be able to produce enough oxygen. So there's always a balance there in nature.
Yes. Plants rely on the CO2. They have to have CO2 in order to thrive.
Clearly, what it seems to me is that if there was a healthy debate between the scientists, mm-hmm. to say, here's the elements that we think are influencing climate change, yes. and the other one saying that that's not true.
Yeah.
I think that would be a fantastic thing to do, but it doesn't seem like that's an encouraged thing to happen.
Okay, that's you're exactly right. And in my book, I know so many of these people who are outstanding meteorologists, outstanding physical scientists, and they have come out over the years saying, no, human-caused global warming, human-caused climate change, there's no such thing. The climate always changes. And I mentioned their names in the book, but I'll give you two guys in particular. One is the world's foremost hurricane expert. I mean, he did a cover endorsement for the book. He forecast the biggest storms on the planet. He didn't believe in it. And there are so many like him. But what happens when you make a statement like this? You don't believe in human-caused climate change. You get blackballed. You get ousted. You get shunned by others in your community. And this is just another way that they play the game. And it's a tactic that's been used by tyrannists over the centuries. I mean, in communist Russia, if you were outspoken on a particular topic, they would just silence you altogether.
Yes.
And so we've got many ways to do that here in the United States. And that's why it's very difficult to have an honest discussion about this, because people just get silenced or they won't give you the opportunity to begin with.
And I want to ask you about the balance, like, say, you know, for the pursuit of happiness, how do you balance between people wanting to create companies, manufacture,
right.
and then at the same time, there's the pollution aspects
yeah.
from that.
Yeah. You know, okay, so I think it comes down to responsibility. Well, for example, if you drive into Washington State, they've been very responsible with the way they harvest wood. We need wood in this country for building, and the way they harvest their lumber is really smart. And they'll clear cut, and then they'll immediately reseed.
Mm.
And when they reseed, you can drive up the highways in Washington State and you'll see a beautiful forest on each side of the highway and the trees, oh my gosh, they must be 40 or 50 feet tall. And they'll say, this area was clear cut 10 years ago. And they'll give you reminders the whole way, because
wow.
they've been able to do things very responsibly, as opposed to just coming in, clear cutting and not doing anything with the land and letting it regrow and become a waste. I think
that's a very good point.
If you look at the farmers in this country, our farmers, you know, they grow products that benefit our lives. They grow food. And farmers can be some of the most responsible people, because it's their land and they own it and they want to take great care of it. So things can be done in a responsible manner, and we don't need the heavy-handed pressures of government forcing us to do things that are absolutely ridiculous in many cases and costly in many cases in order to be good stewards of the planet.
Brian, we thank you so much for your time. We want to invite you next week to talk about ESG.
ESG, I can't wait. Thank you.
Questions to our audience. David, did you know that Earth Day is the same day as Lenin's birthday?